Hey guys, welcome back to the Libby DeLucian podcast, where we go one layer deep into life, home, and business of high capacity leaders. I'm Libby DeLucian, your host, and we're here to help you strip back the noise, find your clarity, and create systems that really work in your life, not just on a piece of paper. Each week, we dive into no fluff conversations, powerful frameworks, and stories from people who've built success without sacrificing their sanity. If you're ready to lead with more peace, profit, and purpose, let's go one layer deep. Hassan, I want to make sure I don't mess up your first name. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and we can dive in.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me, Libby. So I'm Hussein Halak. I am an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, and I'm an author. And I built over 22 businesses and lived across three wonderful cities: Damascus, the oldest city in the world, the oldest capital in the world, and then Dubai, and then Vancouver, right now where I reside. And I wrote the book, The Dark Art of Life Mastery, to help entrepreneurs and people who are interested in achieving joy and success navigate the uncertain, the uncertain circumstances that we live in today and will continue to live in the future.
So 22 businesses, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot. So I'm sure you bring a wealth of knowledge and experience. I would say, like, I want to get into the book side. When it comes to entrepreneurism, what made you want to write the book for entrepreneurs?
I've always wanted to write a book. However, when I wanted to write a book, I wanted to write it because I wanted to be an author. I wanted very much to have a book. And I wanted, of course, to write a book that really helps people. The challenge is every time I write a book, I wrote about growth, I wrote about entrepreneurship. But by the time I was halfway through some of these books or I finished them, I didn't feel connected to it. I didn't feel that I added enough value. I felt that, of course, I had a point of view, I had value to give, but not enough. I'm a perfectionist. I love to add immense amount of value. If it's not exponential, I don't want anything to do with it. That's the entrepreneur in me. So I kind of given up on that. And then the pandemic hit. And when the pandemic hit, I got face to face with my mortality. I mean, I know we can die anytime, but the pandemic had a different feel. It's like, oh, we can all die tomorrow. So I felt that I haven't left the people that I haven't met yet, or the entrepreneurs that I still mentor, and most importantly, my kids. I haven't left them with the wisdom that I collected over 30 years of building myself up and building all these businesses and living through different circumstances of life, the ups and downs. And I felt that I'll be remiss and not leaving them with a legacy like that. So I thought I should write and I should encapsulate all of the knowledge and all of the wisdom that I've collected in such a way that they can benefit from it. And that's how the journey of the book started. And it's a 4-year journey. I started around 2021 and I launched it just a month ago. So that's how the book came around.
Yeah. It has an interesting title. When I first saw the title, I didn't think it was an entrepreneur book. What do you think, as far as entrepreneurism goes, what is some of the great benefits? Can you just give us like a sneak peek of maybe something inside the book that, because while you're explaining it, it's like, it's all of that wisdom and then also the mortality and the struggles we face. Like, what is an example you can give us that's inside that book that can really kind of give us a sneak peek so that we want more?
Absolutely. Thank you. So business in the past was mostly kind of something separate. We've always heard of, we chatted, me and you, just before the podcast about work-life balance, which doesn't exist for an entrepreneur. So for an entrepreneur, their business is usually part of their life. And that's why it's the dark art of life mastery, because what we want is it's kind of interconnected and weaved into what we want, our passion. So we get a lot of value and energy from the work that we do and we give it back. We need a life that gives us that energy so that we can put it back into our business, because it takes most of our life. So that's why the name. But what it gives us, the book, what I intended it to be, is to help people navigate the uncertainty. Entrepreneurs always work with uncertainty. And now more than ever, even life and business is uncertain right now. For startups, that's a natural thing. Whenever you're starting up something, whatever you're building a business, you're uncertain. You don't know if the customer is going to like the product. You're testing. You don't know how you're going to grow it. You don't know what challenges you're going to face. It's very different than a business that is already established and know their market. Of course, things change, but not as much as something that is new. So for entrepreneurs, uncertainty is the kind of the standard. And now we live in a world where uncertainty between one day and the other, some president or some country or some policy might change, and the world is completely different between a day and the next. So uncertainty is the state of being. How do you navigate that? The book takes you across a conversation, mainly with me, as if you're discussing it with a mentor, and it takes you across the different aspects of your life and work that are interconnected, and how do you can think about it. It's more about the mindset, because the mindset controls the skills and the tools. You can have the skills and the tools, but if you don't see things through a certain perspective, you won't be able to use those skills and tools in the right place. I'll give you an example. Let's say you are building, a company that is selling, I don't know what now, t-shirts. People love t-shirts. Yeah. So if you approach it and saying, you know what, I'm doing t-shirts and I'm doing it just as a thing to make some money on the side, and that's it. And I'll take any design, I'll take any platform, and I'll just launch it, and I'll cross, you know, fingers crossed, I'll make it a success. That's a perspective. And you may say, well, now what I'm going to do, I'm going to listen to YouTube videos, and I'm going to search for the tools that I'm going to use. And that's how you approach it. Now, what happens when things don't work, which is a normal thing that happens in every business, every venture? What happens when things don't work, if you are only thinking of skills and tools, you're going to search for better skills and better tools. You're going to listen to other YouTubers and other people that are going to tell you to do things a little bit differently, and you're going to continue to do that, and you won't find why things are not working. Now, let's take it in a different way. What if you had the mindset? The mindset is asking yourself, why am I doing this? What is it that I want to create out there? And you might say, well, you know, I always wear t-shirts that are not comfortable for me, and I want comfortable t-shirts that have certain, let's say, feel. I want a design that represents me. So now you have a story. And now that you have a story and you have a perspective that you want to put out there, then you start searching for the skills that help you communicate that. So you start looking for certain designs that are different, not any designs. You start looking for certain tools. For example, you may actually build your website in such a way that represents a brand that is easier for the people that you work with, that communicates with people that relate to the story. So you have far narrower focus and a different approach to talk to anyone. Instead of, well, I'm looking for people who like t-shirts or like to wear t-shirts of a certain kind, now you can say, I'm looking for people who care about the feel of the t-shirt, who care about the design of the t-shirt. And you can identify that if you listen to your favorite YouTubers, for example. You'll see the difference between, here's my merch, buy my merch, and somebody else who can say, like Philip DeFranco, for example. He talks about the certain designs and why he uses that design. And every time there's a story, he doesn't promote his merch. He promotes certain elements on his merch that communicate a certain message. And it creates an emotional connection, which causes people to buy it, even though they're more expensive than other designs that might look, let's say, objectively nicer. So that mindset and the shift in perspective changes everything. And that's why I focus on mindset in the book rather than, I talk about certain skills, I talk about certain tools, but the focus is mindset because it governs everything.
I love your take on work-life balance. I always say, you know, there's no such thing. It's about intentional time, not trying to chase this balance of time. And, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, I do a lot of coaching in the small business space, especially home service. And, you know, because I own my own home service company, and then I also own two softwares. So as far as uncertainty goes, my softwares can become obsolete tomorrow, like with AI, like with the you know, it's uncertainty is everywhere.
Yes.
And so I really like that approach about it and how do I frame it? You know, and I want to ask you a question because I want to get your take on it. I feel like I know what you're going to say. You're just going to use different words. So maybe it'll hit some of our listeners in a different way. Mm. What if I was to say, but what if, you know, I have my why, I have my vision, but for some reason I can't stay on track. I get distracted. What would your response be?
Very cool. So I would say when you're getting distracted, there are reasons for that. Mostly because you're hitting an obstacle that you're trying to figure things out. You're trying, maybe it's you are looking for ideas that will generate, let's say, certain levels of revenue. You are trying to solve a problem and you tried, you know, you throw shit at the wall to see, to see what's going to stick. So the approach for that is usually what I recommend is a scientific approach. Number one, we have to drop the idea that we know what's going to happen. That's the, in part of the book, I talk about life is like a sea and it's going to throw waves at you and it doesn't care about your fancy plans. It doesn't care about your direction. It doesn't care that you are the most experienced captain in the world. It doesn't give a shit. You know,
like, I'm only laughing because I tell everyone that business doesn't have feelings. It doesn't care. It doesn't care if you're going through a divorce, if you're pregnant, if you're sick. Business doesn't care. It doesn't have feelings. It just keeps moving forward.
Absolutely. And a different example of looking at it is the market. You know, as you said, you have two softwares that you're working with. They can become obsolete tomorrow. And it doesn't care that you have 20 years of experience and you have all these clients. The market can change direction at any point. So once you accept as a mindset that uncertainty is the constant that's always happening, when something happens, you don't freak out. You start saying, okay, so this is uncertain. What do I do right now? And instead of trying to focus on long-term vision, and instead of looking at the past and saying, what have I done? How did we get here? You look at the current moment and you navigate the current wave. This is how captains navigate. Of course, you have a direction. You want to go to the treasure island. You want to go to that big exit. But if you're seeing a storm coming in and if you're seeing a big wave, what you do is you are anchored in the moment and you navigate this wave. So the best thing that I actually help entrepreneurs with is I ask them, what is the most important thing right now? What matters most? What is the one thing that if you don't do, everything falls apart? And that usually anchors them immediately in the moment as well. I have to do this. You know, like I have to do my taxes, for example. I know I want to do all of that, but if I don't submit my taxes, I'm in trouble. Or, you know, I need to lead my team today. I need to tell them what to do because otherwise they're not going to do what need, let's say, to launch this thing on time. So what happens is our mind is always, especially as an entrepreneur, our job is to continue searching. We're searching for opportunity. We're searching for this next big thing. We're searching for how to make the thing that we have better, bigger, nicer. At the moment, there are certain things that become clear if you anchor yourself in the moment. So it's a constant exercise between making sure that we're heading towards the destination that we want and also staying anchored in the moment and navigating that moment. And in the moment, we have limited amount of choices that we have. So we make that choice. And what happens is if that choice doesn't work, the next moment comes in and you have the ability to make a different choice. And this is something that people sometimes don't grasp. An easy way to grasp it is with advertising. You design your ad, you put it on Facebook, and you run the ad, and it doesn't perform. What do? You run a different ad. You change something. Exactly. It's constant choices that you do. You don't sit and say, let me spend a week analyzing why the ad didn't work. I mean, of course you need to look at it, but you don't spend a week trying to analyze why the ad didn't work because what's happening throughout this week? Nothing's happening. The ad is not performing. So what you do, I see my partner always doing that. She's excellent in doing the ads. She doesn't bother, you know, like she tells me, I need 6, I need 10, I need to try. It's constant testing. And this is how we should approach business. It's constantly testing ideas instead of drowning ourselves with, oh, I can do this, I can do that. Okay, take one thing out of it, put it to the test, and see what happens, and then work with the results. That anchors people in the moment, anchors people with effective things that they can do. and the results of what they're doing and working, building on those results. And it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be granular. You can still have your big vision, but the things that you do can be very simple, very small, and they can, as long as they're producing results.
I like that, because I think sometimes, you know, there's concepts out there in books and a lot of things. And I think for a small business owner, sometimes that can be too dangerous, like trying to see what's 10 years look like. And we get too forward focused sometimes. I think you can be too forward focused because then you're not paying attention to the moment versus you're looking at 10 years from now. And in 10 years from now, everything could be different. Like literally everything could be different. And so I like that analogy of like, yes, we want that vision of where we're going, but being anchored in the moment is really important. And, you know, at least in my industry, so my home service company is in the cleaning space. And it's like, there's this weird, it's almost like it's a joke, but it's not, because it makes everyone miserable. But I think somewhere, somehow, the expectation was set that this is how it's supposed to be. And that is, it's just chaos all the time. And I would say it's predictable chaos. It is the same thing happening over and over and over. But the way you described it with being uncertainty is the constant, is almost like the same thing of me saying it's predictable chaos. If you know what's going to happen, it's predictable. It's a cycle. You're just not paying attention that it's a cycle. And every time it hits, you're like, oh my God, the sky is falling. And the way you framed it, it makes sense. It's, you know, uncertainty is the constant, not chaos. I added that not chaos on the end for my industry. because I think that, you know, my company is like, we have people come visit all the time. It's like one of the boringest places ever. Cause we've predicted all of it. The chaos. We're just like, oh yeah. Like we knew that was going to happen. Like, that's fine. We know what to do. Like, and I think somewhere along the way, especially in the home service and even in software, cause I'm in software mastermind groups, is that it's supposed to be hectic. It's supposed to be chaotic and chaos and like everything's burning down and my job is to put out the fires. But approaching it with that mindset is almost like approaching it from a place of ease.
I love it that you say that, because the idea that when you're a captain and you know that you're navigating the sea and you know the sea doesn't owe you anything, when a wave throws you off track, you're not like, oh my God, this, as you said, the sky is falling, you know, you're like, oh, a wave is, so what I do, I navigate back, or, you know, that's the whole point of uncertainty, is that you're not freaking out, you're expecting it. So you know that you're navigating, you know that things are going to throw you off track, you know that things are going to happen that are unpredictable. So you take it in and you work with it, instead of what we do is if we have a mindset of things need to be certain. So I'm expecting all the time, everybody to deliver on time, everybody to do their job. You know, the markets need to behave in a certain way. My business need to grow, you know, like at a certain percentage. If you're expecting that and that's the norm for you, then every time something doesn't hit that, you freak out. Whereas if you're expecting that, oh, people don't deliver on time usually, and my team is not going to do what I told them I'd do. What you do, it's not, you know, you're not pessimistic. What you're doing is like, oh, I need to put systems in place to manage this kind of thing. I need, if somebody doesn't deliver on time, for example, I don't wait. I remind them, like we do with meetings. You, if a meeting is important for you, you set it up. You might actually create a software that an hour before reminds you. Why are you doing that? I mean, you already have the timing. Well, so that you manage, let's say, drifting. You forgot about something. You're busy doing something. Or you know that people sometimes, because we're not robots. That's the other thing. All of the industrial age capitalism kind of systems are built around people performing like robots. So here's a system, here's a set of policies, yalla go, you know, you'll do what you're doing. It doesn't happen like that. We are unpredictable beings. Sometimes our emotional state changes everything, and one thing leads to the other, and you know, suddenly one thing can drive a whole wave of chaos, like you said. So if you're looking at things with the mindset that uncertainty is the key, well, then how do I prepare for it? How do I manage it? How do I put things in place to reduce uncertainty? Not to accept, you don't just accept it and just sit aside. No, when you expect it, you actually try to reduce it, try to manage it, navigate
it. Get in front of it. And yeah,
exactly,
navigate it.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah, I love that. And also something that you just said, I just had this conversation with my own coach. I don't think I'm any different than most entrepreneurs with the things that I don't like to do. Like, I don't like the traditional hierarchy of like business and KPIs and like measuring things. And he asked me, he's like, how do your companies run? And I said, you know, the same way that most of them do, KPIs, you know, org charts, that. And he's like, do you like that? And I said, no, but I don't know any other, like, it's just kind of it's everyone I've ever hired to come in and help us. That's the thing. Like, that's the norm. And he's like, it's pretty interesting. He's like, it doesn't surprise me that you don't like it. He's like, a lot of this stuff came from the industrial age or from the military, because a lot of CEOs came out of those eras that built what we now look at as like traditional business models. And that's one of the reasons why, like he said, he feels that a lot of more modern business owners don't like those models. Like we're resistant to them. We're not great like at some of these things, or we don't like them because it doesn't fit our natural way of like how we want to run a business. And so what you said resonated, because I just had this conversation with my coach, and we're looking at building something different for the way I want to run the business, not the traditional like corporate age. Like you said, here's some policies and here's a process and like go and do it. So I've built the internal side of my business, like when it comes to like operations and customer service, that way. But when we're looking at it from a C-suite level or a management level, it looks like the old traditional way of business. And that's really boring to me.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And so I want to ask you, you know, I just wrote a book and I have to say it was not easy. It was hard and it took a lot out of me. And you have to like give it everything you got and you have to pour yourself into it. It's almost like another business. You know, it's, and you're putting it in just this thing, and it's just you and that thing. But as far as writing the book, can you just share for our listeners like a little bit of experience? Like, if someone wants to get into, you know, if they want to be an author, when people found out that I'm writing a book and I'm going to be an author, they're like, oh, I've always wanted to write a book. And a lot of entrepreneurs do.
Yeah. I love what you said when, in regards to your business, that you want, there are certain ways that people do something. And you wanted to do something differently and something that resonates with you. And that's usually how, let's say, new business models are created, or new business experiences. If we look at some of the best businesses that we see right now, we see that the culture internally is usually different than other businesses. That's why they grew really fast. They didn't follow the way that things are. For example, a lot of startups never hired a marketing person, for example. They would actually do the growth themselves, and they would try to do it and then try to hack it. And that's why growth hacking came about. So in regards to books, there are certain ways that people write books. I chose to write the book in a very different, and I would say not because I wanted it to be different, but because I wanted to write a book that represents what the purpose of it is, which is, I had the privilege of mentoring hundreds of entrepreneurs. I used to run the Launch Academy business incubator or startup incubator here in Vancouver. And we've helped over 6,000 founders that collectively raised over $2.5 billion. And we graduated some of the best businesses that came out of in Vancouver and Canada. And from that, I loved the mentorship conversation. And the mentorship conversation always works with the entrepreneur. and goes, and maybe a term that people don't like, but it meanders in the sense that it actually flows with the person. When you look at books, most books have, let's say, kind of a rigid structure in the sense that there's a chapter, there's a length for the chapter, there's a length for the words, there's a process, which is fine. I love those books. I read a lot of those books. But I wanted a book that delivers the objective, and the objective that I wanted to have is to replace a mentorship conversation. That is, if I wanted to mentor someone, and instead of spending my time trying to kind of replicate myself, I said, can I write a book that replicates that mentorship conversation, takes you across multiple stories, multiple probably situations that you go through as an entrepreneur and as a person, and you will get the mentorship that as if you were talking to me. And that's what I set out to do. And I think I was successful because every time anybody reads the book, they're blown away by, it's like, I didn't expect it. Everybody says that. I didn't expect it to be like that. And it lands differently for everyone, which is what I wanted. So the way I wrote it is I started writing and I asked myself, what are the important things that I need to talk about? For example, there's the third chapter called Then You Die. And that book and that chapter is, I think, is around maybe 100 words. And literally what it does, it says the average lifespan is 69 years. And that means such and such months, I think it's around 25 months or 25,000 months and like several hundred thousand days. So what ends up happening is I wanted to give you quantify what the what your lifespan is, because when we live, we think we're going to live forever. Our sense of time, we don't perceive time because time didn't exist for us millions of years ago. You know, time meant nothing. So we don't perceive time. So why I wanted to do that is because you now know that your days are numbered. So instead of telling you your days are numbers, hey, by the way, here's the number of days that you have.
You actually numbered the days.
Yes. And the reason I did that, and it comes after another chapter where I say, you know, you need to do this and all of this, and you're working on yourself, and you know, the world is exploding, and you have a lot of things happening, then you die. And why is that? Because I wanted to give you, this is a stoicism kind of approach, which is to be in touch with your mortality, that you don't control this. Another element of uncertainty. So if you want to make a choice and don't postpone it, make the choice right now. Don't postpone your living. I talk about another concept called someday living, which is all of our life is about, you know, someday when I...
Oh, I love this topic. I could go on for days.
Yeah. So someday, you know, we go to school so that someday we will become, you know, an engineer, or I'll have the career. And then when XYZ happens, when I have enough money, when I have the house, when I have the car, when I have the right career, then I will be happy. And my recommendation is like, no, this is the moment that you have. This moment is where life unfolds. You need to be enjoying this moment, and you need to make choices in this moment that impact life right now. Right in this moment, you're creating your future. And that is, so I wrote the book as a continuous conversation. And that's why you see the art as if we're walking in a gallery or a museum and we're looking at art and we're having conversation that sometimes it's a chapter that is 2 pages long. Sometimes it's a chapter that is 100 words long, yeah. Because that's how real conversations happen. So that's how I wrote it. Yeah.
So I want to talk about this topic then, because it intrigued me, the don't postpone your living. I have so many people around me and in my life that I'm noticing this more and more and more. Like I only got 5 more years until I can retire and move to Florida. But you're like only 40 years old. Like, because they want to, like, and it's so interesting to sit here and watch, because I live very fast and you know, without limitation, or I try to, because one of my biggest self-sabotaging tendencies was I would always say the phrase, I'm not ready. It was like my go-to. I did a self-sabotaging exercise with my husband and we worked through them. And then we allowed each other to call each other out when we heard those trigger phrases. And they were, you do not realize this until you go through this exercise. You have trigger, like literal sentences you say all the time. Once you can acknowledge that sentence, you're aware of it. You then stop yourself like in mid sentence. I will be like, I'm not I'm almost ready. Like, and it's so interesting because that phrase, I'm not ready, was my way of postponing living. And when you work through these like self-sabotaging, then you see them in other people and you're like, why are they waiting to live until they can like retire with a pension? Because you could die tomorrow in a car accident. Like, And then the someday living, someday, I want to get your perspective. I have a senior in high school. I also have a 27-year-old. He's grown. He's out on his own. He's out. But the someday living, I think they pressure a lot of children with this someday living kind of mindset. Like someday, like, you know, you're going to grow up to be this. Like someday. How in the book or how do you approach this, like, say with a 17-year-old who's a senior, who's preparing for life, how to not live in that someday moment?
Yeah. I had this similar experience with my son. My son is now in his second year in university, and he wanted to study computer engineering. And when I asked him why, he said, I will work for 10 years, make enough money, and then I'll pursue art. I was like, well, first of all, you don't know that you're going to be able to work in an industry for 10 years. You don't know what that industry looks like in a year from now. And we were talking about that like 2 years ago. And we know that the software engineering industry looks very different today.
Completely. Very different.
Yeah. So I told him, well, why don't you pursue art right now? If that's what you love, if that's what you, what's your choice, make your choice right now. Live right now in the moment. And a lot of people don't like that because they think living in the moment is different than, you know, like we have this thing about, delayed gratification, that it's about, you know, living in the moment for many people is like, oh, let's waste our time and do, you know, have drink and party and all of that. And you can do that by all means. I'm not judging that, but it's not like that. It's really about understanding that the only time that exists is now. You can definitely plan, but the past is already gone, and you can definitely analyze the past to learn from it, but you can't continue to relive it, and you can't continue today based on what you did in the past. I've had many people who studied engineering, but they love music. And the reason why they work in an engineering job, because they studied for 5 years engineering. And when you ask them why you're doing this, why you're not pursuing music, well, do you mean that the 5 years that I've spent engineering are gone? Well, newsbreak, they're already gone. Whatever you've done with these years, they've already gone. Right now, what is your choice right now? So it's hard because all of life, everything around us rewards us for that delayed gratification, that, you know, someday you need to build a career, because only when you have, you know, 10 years or 15 years will you get paid a certain amount, will you, you know, deserve certain things. And the challenge with that, and it's a challenging thing to do, what I ask people to do is to anchor themselves in now and say, what is it? So have all the dreams that you have. I had the vision board that had on it climbing Mount Everest, being, I would say, speaking on the TED stage, having a Mercedes SLS. I don't drive right now, but I love the Mercedes SLS. And I had all these things that for me were the perception of success. And I asked myself this question, what is the one thing that if I don't have right now, nothing else matters? And when I asked myself that question, everything became clear. And it's one thing and one thing only. At the time, it was 2009. I remember it very clearly. And it was happy and healthy family now. And I don't mean in the next second. I don't mean tomorrow. I mean now. And when that became clear, I left everything and I went to spend some time with the family. And I make sure that whatever I prioritize need to be through that lens. So what I call people, I said, don't let go of your dreams. Whatever you dream about, I'm in no place to judge how valuable that is. But the question you need to ask yourself, is your perception of success based on on what you want or what other people value as success? So are you after that Ferrari because that Ferrari gives you the feeling, because it is your measure of success, because it's what you really want? Or are you after it because other people will value your success because of it? Because once you get it, see, there is nothing wrong with going after anything in life, as long as you're not hurting other people's well-being. There's nothing wrong. But when you get it and you think the world is going to perceive you in a certain way and you're going to get something else when you get that thing, so you got it as a means to an end, as a means to joy, you're going to be very disappointed.
You are. I've had that Ferrari. Well, it wasn't mine. It was my ex. Yes.
And I have a reason why I have this thinking, by the way, if you want, I can expand on it. Well, I was lucky because I grew up in Syria. So growing up in Syria, Damascus, Syria, the oldest capital in the world, we didn't have a career. Like, I was studying engineering, but you don't work as an engineer in Syria. Like, I worked as an engineer for the government, but you don't build a career in engineering. You're not going to get hired by Intel or Facebook or stuff like that because you were in Syria. The best that you can do is you have a paying job and you get a house and you get a wife and a car. That's it. There are no hopes and dreams. So with that, even though it may sound for other people, it's demoralizing, it anchored me in the moment because all I had is what I could experience in the moment. I didn't have future dreams because there were no dreams. I wanted to become a musician. In the 90s, you could only do that in New York or LA, to build a music career. You couldn't build a music career while in Syria. Are you kidding me? Like a rock star? No ways. It's never going to happen. So all I could is like, what do I want right now? Well, I want to play guitar and I want to enjoy it. So that's what I did. And I went and I did concerts and I did music and I had zero hopes for the future. So I made sure that every single moment I did everything that I could to enjoy it. So I tested and tried everything. And that kind of became the anchor for my life, a coincidence. And then it became a mantra. And that's how I actually kind of went along and did my life. And it gave me, I saw the difference between me and other people who are going after a career and building and building. It's like, why you're people into a job that they hate. It's like, why you're doing this if you hate it? Well, if I stay here, I had friends of mine who worked in ad agencies and they hated working for ad agencies. Well, if I'm an art director right now, I'll become a creative director and then I'll go build my own agency. I was like, well, I'm building my company right now. Yeah, but you named yourself creative director. I need to earn it from the industry. And guess what? I was happier than they were. And every day they complained about their job. Every day they hated it. I was like, I don't want to live that life. I don't care what it gives me. I don't want to live that life.
I think for, and this is true for women, because I can speak on behalf of women, a lot of this, the delayed gratification or like, I think, a lot of it comes from one, how you're raised, what you're told by parents and in school and then in society, right? Oh, you're supposed to do this and then this and then this. Oh, you're supposed put your kids before you. Mm-hmm. Like you're supposed to, once you're married, this is how you act. It's funny because when I say, this has nothing to do with business, but just allowing my own like cleaning company to clean my house, I was like, oh my God, what are my parents going to say? What are my friends going to say? Because you're supposed to clean your own house. That's your job, right? Like, and it's just social media and socially, right? We have these things that we're brought up with that we think we have to follow and that we have to do. Versus just doing that one thing that you want to do right now. Who cares about what anyone else says or thinks or your parents or your siblings? It's really hard for people. They can't do that.
Yeah. We thrive on that social acceptance because we millions of or hundreds of thousands of years ago, it mattered that we fit in the tribe and we have a role to play in the tribe, or else we're on our own. We get exiled, and that meant death. Because outside the safety of the tribe, so our brains are geared towards that. It's only a few, let's say, 100 years that we built a civilization that we enjoy today, and we have the rights and the freedoms we have today. Before that, we survived by getting along, by being part of a group. Because otherwise, there's no safety, there's no support, and you, on your own, we can't survive. Now we have that ability. Of course, we took it to a place where, well, we kind of understood it wrongly and we don't collaborate or we don't work within a community. That's important. But we don't have to fit in as much. We can be our own self while also collaborating. And there is a place for having independent ideas. But it's scary for our brain and we want to get along because that's what our brain is telling us. If you don't get along, that equals death. If you get bad feedback, that you have to protect yourself because that equals death in our previous lives.
But I think it makes a lot of sense because a lot of entrepreneurs, I watch them struggle with things that you think would be easy, like decisions that you think would be easy, or like not conforming to the, like, this is how you're supposed to do business. And I'm like, no, I'm done having people tell me the way it's supposed to be. I'm going to do it the way I want to be. And that's me. And I think for me, I've learned the lessons because I've made the mistakes and I'm like, I'm done doing those. But watching my peers and other people, it's really interesting to say, it's like it's the way we're neurologically, our brains are wired, and we have to rewire that way of thinking. And that is much more difficult than just like thinking you can just do it. Yes.
So, it's one of the most difficult things to change your mindset and adopt new mindsets.
It is, because it goes back to like almost having to rewire the way you think. This is a great topic. I would love to go on forever, but we were almost on 45 minutes. Can you tell our listeners where they can find your book? We'll make sure that we put all the book and your information in our show notes. But just tell us where we can find it, the title of the book again. And then do you have any other big projects rolling out? Maybe another book? Do you do anything else? You mentioned mentoring as well.
Sure. Thank you for that. And thank you for the wonderful conversation. It's been awesome talking to you. So I would say find me at HusseinHalaq.com. Very easy. And you can search The Dark Art of Life Mastery. You'll find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it will guide you to my website. I would say that's the way to go. And definitely I'm building several of our companies under the brand Next Decentrum, which is my company that helps businesses grow exponentially through digital transformation. So yeah, I would love for people to read the book. Right now we reduced the price, $2. You can get it through I would say Kindle, and you can read it. And I think it will make a big difference. And I would love reviews from people. And please reach out to me for my email as well. Easy, Hussein@HusseinHalaq.com.
Well, that's an easy one. Yeah, we'll make sure we put all that in the show notes. One last question I have. You said a phrase just a second ago. You're putting your companies under one. You insinuated that you had multiple companies. I know you said you had 22 or have. How many do you currently have right now?
Well, it's one company, but several businesses underneath it, because we basically keep creating IP. So we create, in addition to the digital transformation, we are creating a calligraphy store it was on Etsy, sold very well. So now we're building its own brand. We're creating a brand called Culture Choice that works specifically with museums and help create cultural aspects. I love to write. So I write stories. We write comics, and I work with artists a lot. So we create several of these great artistic kind of brand driven experiences that we love to turn into product and sell them. So that's something that we're working on right now. We've been doing it for other brands all the time, but now we're doing it for ourselves as well.
Awesome. I love it. Just a little side note. I was a giant calligraphy nerd in middle school or high school. I can't remember. Oh, I was big, and I had the pens and everything. Like, I was super into calligraphy. I don't know. I'm a very interesting person. Don't ask me why.
Well, you have exceptional taste. So I can imagine that.
Yeah, so I love that. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for being our guest. And for all of our listeners, if you like this episode, make sure you subscribe. Again, this is Libby DeLucian, where we go one layer deep to cut the chaos, build a life and a business that work together. Thank you guys for listening. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.